Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us. As you're listening to today's program, remember you can still email questions in for the mayor to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. And we have the mayor on the line right now. Mayor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I want to start things out today by saying I'm glad you're feeling better after you yourself just experienced what it's like to have COVID-19. What was it like to go through that just on a personal level, not just as a local official who's been part of the COVID response process in this area?
Oh, well, thank you for your well wishes there. And it's great to be back, and I'm feeling good. Well, I was, fortunate. I did have a fever and a little bit of a cough and some body aches and was tired. I fortunately did not have the respiratory issues that some of our citizens are experiencing, where you need oxygen and some things like that. So I think my symptoms were probably relatively mild. So I was lucky from that standpoint, but the first 5 or 6 days certainly were uncomfortable. Quarantining in the same bedroom for 14 days, that was quite the experience that I don't want to have to repeat. But it is something that the community is certainly dealing with. And as we found, it's different for everybody on the symptoms that you have, the severity. And, for me, nobody else in my household tested positive. My administrative assistant didn't test positive. My controller, who I have to meet with, didn't test positive. So I'm not quite sure even where I got it, because I had not been notified that I had been around anybody that had tested positive. And so, that's one of the things that's very difficult with this virus like that. Sometimes you don't even know when you're, wearing a mask and taking the precautions, you're still not sure where you picked it up.
So as you were experiencing symptoms, what do you think might be helpful information from your experience for anyone listening as people are remaining cautious about virus transmission and staying aware of their own possible symptoms?
Well, I mean, one of the things that really helped me, if you would happen to get it and have to stay at home from that standpoint, was my wife and kids made sure that I had one of those oximeters that you put on your finger to make sure of the how much oxygen you have in your blood. And that's a very important piece and kind of a telltale sign when you need to seek medical attention. And so I think that was actually very helpful, and it seemed like about every 5 minutes I was getting a text, a phone call, or a knock on the door asking me what my level was. So, for me, that was a big piece of making sure that the respiratory part of it was not, dropping to a level that I needed to be concerned about. So, and then, you've got to keep up your strength with some protein drinks and some things like that, because I did lose my appetite, even though I didn't lose my sense of taste or smell.
Okay.
I did lose my appetite. And so, you still need to keep protein in you and those things. So you got to stay on top of the nutrition, piece of it too, and keep your fever under control. So those are just a few, things for me. And, but we just, like I told people, and because lots of people ask, well, where do you think you've got it? And, sometimes you just don't know, but that's why we have to be vigilant with our mask wearing and our hand washing and doing our best to keep our distance, to give us every potential advantage, at least to the best of our ability, because I don't know, somebody must have just maybe came through City Hall that had it somehow and not even aware of it.
So right now, two things are kind of happening at the same time here in Indiana. So first, yesterday, state officials said we're expecting about 55,000 COVID-19 vaccinations next week, and the priority recipients will be healthcare workers and long-term care residents. And that initial supply is limited, and we'll know more about what's going to be available in the coming weeks. But that's obviously really great news, really important news. And then secondly, yesterday, the governor said Indiana is on fire and elective non-emergency procedures at hospitals are canceled from December 16th to at least January 3rd. Lots of counties in a serious position right now. So we are still in a serious situation. how do we get through the coming months safely, knowing that some help is on the way, but we're not quite there yet? We're still kind of in a holding pattern waiting for that.
Right. And I think you actually framed that answer up very, very well. I think that's, you know, what we have to realize is, one, we do want to have hope. Yes, hope is important. And, you know, the longer this goes on, I have started seeing in just people that I've dealt with and phone calls and things like that, you know, the mental health aspect of this is very real. There are people that are very lonely and people that feel very isolated and people that are very, you know, concerned and in difficult spots. So it is good to have hope, and it is good to think that, you know, there are vaccines that are on the way and that being developed, you know, with great standards by great companies and great doctors. And there is help on the way, because we all need that mental help, you know, too. And so I think that's important. And then with that being said, we, as you said, there's only 55,000 doses that, from my understanding, you know, won't even get through kind of that first set of priority,
right,
with hospital, healthcare workers, people in long-term care facilities. And then certainly that doesn't get us down to other frontline workers like police officers, firefighters, EMTs that are out every day in and out of hospitals, in and out of homes, in and out of all types of situations. So we do know that, you know, we have a ways to go, even though I think the vaccine production that will happen in January and February and leading into March as other companies come online and ramp up, I think it will go well, and I think we'll begin to put a dent in things. So, but, you know, with that being said, we have to continue to be vigilant with our masking, our social distancing, and those, our hand washing, because, you know, right now we have a lot of small businesses, locally owned businesses, that are kind of right on the edge, and we need to support them. And one way that we can do that is by being vigilant in our activities, so we don't overwhelm our healthcare system. We don't have to try to have additional restrictions unless absolutely, you know, necessary, that we can at least stay where we're at, that we can keep our schools open. So we really kind of have to double down now in what we're doing, but do that with the kind of the hope and the joy in your mind also, that there is better days ahead, and there will be return, you know, over time to different levels of normalcy, and, you know, that there is that hope. And hope is a very powerful thing, and I hope people can kind of keep it all in that perspective.
I also wanted to quickly ask you about this. I was curious. I saw the city asked residents who might have COVID-19 in their households bag their recycling and put it out with the trash, so sanitation workers don't have to handle that. If we're kind of talking about people who are essential workers who kind of have to be out there doing their job, how did that decision come about?
Well, it's just, you know, it was just a rec. I don't recall exactly off my head, top of my head, where we saw that at, but there was a recommendation from someplace that was just another small step that you could do, you know, because typically we don't touch the recyclables a lot. But over the past year and a half, as recycling markets have crashed all over the world, and it's hard to even sell recyclables and those things, you know, the companies that handle it really got away from, you know, bagging your recyclables, right? So people, including myself, would, you know, put a trash bag in your can there, not your can, but whatever you have at home, mm-hmm. throw all your recyclables in, wrap it up, you know, and drop it in your recyclable toter, gets dumped, goes to the MRFs. But they don't want people putting your recyclables in those plastic bags anymore. It messes up the machines and it's just not as efficient. So they want people to they want the recyclables to be loose. Well, when anything is loose, as you can imagine, we end up touching it. It falls out, things tip over. So we end up picking things up, and that's okay. We want the recyclables to, you know, be able to be used as much as possible for the, you know, the good of the environment. But under the current situation, it puts us in a little bit of a trickier position. You know, the guys and gals do wear gloves and masks and things, but, you know, just another little piece of helping keep them safe as possible till we do get through this, get a vaccine and stuff, because, you know, they pick up about 25,000 locations in a week. So we do about 5,000 houses a day with two toters each, and then other crews that are picking up leaves, limbs, large items. And so we do end up handling a lot of things that come out of people's homes. And so we're just, you know, trying to be as careful as possible with our staff.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg, and right now we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Razworski. We have a listener question for you from Lafayette resident Wes. I'm going to boil this down for you to its main points.
Okay.
He says he's having issues regarding broadband internet in his area. He's a small business owner who works from home right now. His wife works from home for the federal government, and he has two children. They're doing online coursework for school, so you know, internet access is important to their family.
Mm-hmm.
He then describes all the different scenarios and providers he has tried to get reliable internet access without success, and there are many. And right now it looks like he's spending close to $500 a month on kind of a workaround solution. And he writes, contractual boundary lines and some actuarial accountant is leaving myself and neighbors in a black hole. Funds to extend broadband to rural areas can run fiber to Linden, but can't get it from the house behind mine to me. And he ends his email with, the question is, who is going to fix this? Whose office do I have to inundate with paper and email to fix this ridiculous problem? So he is turning to you, Mayor Razworski, and asking, who should he turn to fix his internet issue?
Well, you said he was a Lafayette resident, so that surprises me a little bit. That's the first I've heard of that, and somebody paying, and again, if you could help break that down for me, he's paying $500 just for internet service. We're not talking TV, telephone, you know, different packages of, you know, movies and things like that. He is indicating he is paying $500.
It looks like a couple of different bills, maybe one to create like kind of a hotspot solution. And certainly I can forward this email on, but it looks multiple providers and just keeps kind of running into a wall on how to fix this particular issue. And I think that the internet access plus work from home tangle right now is probably making this more urgent. Maybe if, you know, for lots of people, not just for him. I just think he's looking for who's the person he needs to get on the phone who can give him an actual answer, an actual solution to this problem.
Right. Well, I think probably what's best to do, because like I said, we have a Comcast, we have Metronet. There is obvious. Well, Wintech has been purchased by Tipmont. There, mm-hmm. you know, there are lots of other there are lots of providers here in the community. So it might be helpful if you would just forward me that email and any information that he sent along, and not let me go through it, digest. Let me have some members of my staff look at it, and then we'll get back with him and see if we can figure out exactly why there is a problem and what he's running into, and see if we can help guide him in the right direction. Without seeing all that documentation, it's a little bit hard for me to appropriately comment on that.
Okay. I will send that along.
Thank you.
Okay. So I wanted to ask about this also, going back a couple days. On Monday, the governor announced a third round of grant funding for the COVID-19 response program for local governments. Didn't know if the city of Lafayette was planning on applying for that funding, and it kind of covers a range of eligible activities.
Well, I haven't looked at that closely yet. You know, we've got applied and got our CARES funding that we needed, and right now our PPE and the things that we're using, police and fire, we're able to get, and the health department who applies and gets things have been able to be help furnish us those types of things. And so I'll take a look at it. We're not you know, to see if there's some way we might be able to use that to help others. We're not in bad shape right now, which is a good thing. We're in pretty good shape. And so, you know, I would want to make sure that there really was an appropriate use for us to, you know, something in there. And I know the health department's got some additional money for some educational outreach. I've heard some of the commercials and things on the radio that they're doing. So we also want to make sure that we're not, you know, kind of double dipping and duplicating what's taking place. So I don't have a good answer for you right yet, if that's something we'll do or not.
Okay. So the city is holding a virtual meeting next week, December 16th, for the public about the new public safety building and then a new parking garage. And you released a video yesterday inviting people to come to this meeting. You said we really want the public's input as we put this new building together, and the building will help represent the future of the Lafayette Police Department. You talked about it being a space that brings the department together with the community. And you touched on a few initiatives that, you know, the department wants to implement, such as spending more time working with people struggling with mental illness and drug addiction. And I guess, can you give us, you know, even a preliminary idea of how this new building might help serve some of those needs that you were talking about?
Sure. So what we're really excited about, one, the current building is just, they're out of room, they're out of space, and it's just not laid out in an efficient way for modern policing and all the different things that we need to do now, or that we're asked to do, you know, every day in society. And so, you know, one of the things with this new building and with the new CAD system and RMS system that we're developing right now, even before the building is built, that will go into the building, and where the building will allow us to expand our ARC system and allow us to expand our dispatch and some of the other technology that we have, is our goal is, through the use of this building, expanding that use of technology and that use of software, that we're going to be able to reduce our officers' administrative time, we hope, by at least 50%. And maybe more. So everything from the way we check in evidence, the way we check in property, the way that they go through their shifts, the way that they can come in and out of the building, the software that will auto-populate a lot of their reports, will also do voice recognition using artificial intelligence. So we want to cut down, through all of that in the building, their administrative time by about 50%. What that will allow us to do then is have special groups of officers that, because we can put 50% of that time back into other activities. You can never go hire 50%. So if your department's, which we're almost 150 people, I'll never be able to afford to hire 75 additional policemen. It's just the number's astronomical. But if you can take the number of policemen that you have, and you can open up the amount of time that they have by 50%, then we'll be able to have a special group of officers that in plain clothes and stuff that are out just dealing with folks with mental illness, a group of officers that'll have the time and will be assigned differently to help people that we have calls involved with that are involved with drug addiction, and to help get them services and deal with them in a different way. We'll be able to be more in the Boys and Girls Clubs and Hannah Center and Bauer and places like that, building relationships and doing more outreach with the community. And so, you know, part of this building, one, we are just out of space, but the other part is to be designed and utilized and technology put in a way that frees us up to be able to take significant amount of time that we're now just running calls or just typing reports, filling out paperwork, logging in property, logging in evidence, logging out property, logging out evidence, and all those things that tie us up, and free that time up to be doing our police work differently and have the manpower to do that.
So what input are you expecting from Lafayette residents? Why is it important that they be involved in this process?
Well, you know, as we talk about those things and what our goals are, my hope is, you know, that if there are things that we are potentially forgetting, some space that we might need, organizations that might be able to help play a role in that, that will need connectivity to us in some way, or a designated or a shared space in the building. Things that people maybe that have dealt with police services that will come and say, you know, if this was available like this, or this window was open, or you could get to this division this way, you know, our experience, it would make it easier. Or we've had to come in and, you know, the way the waiting rooms have been designed, look at the way we're designed, you know, we're not conducive. These things have been problematic in the past, people that do. So, you know, all kinds of things like that. If people have run across things, if people might know how we can build relationships and what that space might need to look like inside the building and those types of things. It's really just a general, you know, call out to get those ideas. You know, we know how much space we have now. We've been able to acquire the properties that we needed to acquire. And we know about the square footage that we can afford and that we want to get to. And we have some preliminary ideas of how that will fit. So I think we're at a good spot where people can really take a look at it and have an understanding of what we're trying to do and see how we can make it better, or if we've missed things before we go. You know, we're kind of what they call schematic drawings right now. So it's enough that people can get an idea, but we haven't went to construction documents yet. So we have time to make changes or add things or move things around a little bit if need be. So we're right kind of in that sweet spot. And like I said, because we have acquired all the properties and we've closed on those and we own them, there's nothing that would, you know, now at this point that would change anything where we have to come back and say, well, we have to make it a lot smaller now because weren't able to acquire this building or this parking lot. All that's done, all that's taken care of. So we're in a good spot where people can really look at it and make suggestions knowing we have this footprint available.
I think in your video, you also talked about this kind of being a once in a lifetime opportunity to put this structure together. And I mean, as you're looking at what needs to happen with the new space and designing it, are you thinking about, you know, what the police department needs to provide for citizens, you know, years from now?
Absolutely. We're looking at, you know, what can be done? How should we do this so it still can be reconfigured? It could be, walls could be moved, different things. So 30, 40 years from now, you know, they'll still be able to, this building be used efficiently. And the police department is not giving up all of its space in the current building either. So, you know, we're going to keep some things, probably like a workout facility and some storage and things like that still in this current space. So we really can program the other space to do the most important things. We have a community room where the community can come in. We can host meetings with them. They can host meetings there. It's going to have a small kitchen and a catering area so we could actually do events. We're going to have a space that in the back that's a community plaza where officers in the community can get together, or people can just come there and relax and eat their lunch, or somebody can sit there and play a guitar. You know, we're trying to do it in a way that makes it welcoming and that there can be connections and relationship building between people, and rooms could be shared. It would be set up even if the city council was having a meeting and we thought we were going to have overflow or something. This room will all be set up. The city council could just have their meeting over there and there'd be room for maybe 300 people to sit, you know, instead of 100 and things like that. So we're designing it with those types of flexibility to it. So it really has a, you know, community aspect and a community feel, but yet gives the officers the safety and security they need. And then of course meets all the requirements for storing evidence, storing property, DNA, blood, all those things that we have to do, evidence that's going to trial and all those things, and do that in a much more efficient way too. Like I said, again, that helps free up time to get, you know, officers back out in the community and doing other things.
So earlier this year, it seems like a lifetime ago, you and I talked about the possibility of 3rd Street and 4th Street becoming two-way streets, and the city released the feasibility study, and essentially making these streets two-way streets is feasible. What are your big takeaways from the study? What traffic flow issues will this help the most in downtown?
Well, you know, we had, to the best of our ability, public meetings on it over Zoom and everything. And overall, the response was fairly positive that, you know, typically when you can get rid of one-way streets and you can get back to two-way, it's better for business. It's better for people drive slower. They're more likely to stop than if they're just on kind of a, you know, zoom through with two lanes of traffic just trying to get through. So our hope is that, you know, it will help businesses downtown. It'll help businesses kind of on those side blocks have more visibility. It'll slow people down a little bit driving through downtown, as we've used, you know, on some of the 4th Street. You've already seen where we've put in new bike lanes when we redid 4th Street. So we're looking for opportunities then to make it more pedestrian and bicycle friendly as we do that. So, you know, the Main Street, I think, is a great example. A lot of people probably remember when Main Street was one way and then finally went back from, you know, for part of it to two way, and that dramatically helped. I think people probably would say when you're on South Street and Columbia and they're both one ways, you have a tendency to drive faster and kind of shoot down the street. And so, you know, those we can't really change. But there are ones like this that we can change that we just think will be helpful, and it'll create, you know, more of a downtown feel in the central business district, where the primary goal is to move pedestrian and bicycle traffic and make it friendly for people to shop and eat and live and enjoy those experiences. Still, you know, we still need to move the traffic effectively and efficiently, but our goal is really to make it more pedestrian, bicycle friendly, and help people park easier and see, you know, different businesses a little bit easier and bring, you know, better exposure to some of those blocks that don't get quite as much exposure, or people are going by them at a pretty high rate of speed one direction and you're kind of just moving through.
Do you know when this could be happening? When would that process get started?
You know, a lot of it is not structural. A lot of it is painting and lines and things like that. There's a piece of it that is some structure, but my hope is that, you know, sometime this year we would at least get started on that, maybe get that done. If not, it'd certainly be done by 2022.
All right, that is our time for today. Mayor Zaworski, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Emily.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.